It's Mike Jeffers, ChicagoJazz.com, Chicago Jazz Magazine, and welcome to Talkin' Jazz. I am here today with Joe Palacastro. We are in episode 124. We're talking about Joe's trio releasing another recording. He's been traveling all over the world, all over the country, all over the world. Sometimes
maybe out the world.
Sometimes outer space.
Yeah, it's been incredible.
But he's releasing the brand new recording, Nothing Here Belongs, with Joe Palacastro Trio, February 8th at Winter's Jazz Club. So I wanted to make sure we had you on. We've been talking about doing something for a little while. Your CD release review, I should say, your CD review is in the new issue of Chicago Jazz Magazine.
Fantastic.
Your 10 questions is in Chicago Jazz Magazine, out on ChicagoJazzMagazine.com. And now you're here. You are on a media blitz.
Chicago Jazz Magazine media blitz.
That's right. And now we're at
a hot dog stand. The legendary Johnny O's.
The legendary Johnny O's. I mean, this is the only jazz show talking jazz, hot dogs, and French fries in the entire country. I can guarantee it.
I think so.
Yeah.
I think so. Yeah.
That must be why my ratings are so unbelievable.
Absolutely.
All right. Anyways, Joe. So let's talk a little bit. I mean, you've been performing. You've been up here in Chicago for many, many years. You've been playing every gig. I think you and I first played together probably 15, 20 years ago or something like that.
15 years ago, yeah.
Yeah. But you have, for the past 4 or 5 years, you have really pushed and created your own sound, your own trio.
Mm-hmm.
You guys play at Pops for Champagne 3 nights a week?
Yeah, every Sunday, Monday, Tuesday.
And that's been going on for how long?
Well, that gig started almost 10 years ago.
Wow.
But I took it over as the leader and really pushing the trio about 5 years ago.
Okay.
But it's been in its fixed form now with it, you know, with Michael Avery and Dave Miller for, gosh, about 4 years now. So it was just one of those interesting situations where we had this opportunity, or, you know, I got this gig, and it was sort of an accidental gig. It was, this is when Pops moved from, you know, it used to be up on Sheffield,
right,
and then they moved down to their location at State in Ohio. The jazz club was downstairs, and they were having private parties upstairs.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, they booked a duo one time, and they noticed all these people kept trying to come in because, you know, it's like animatronics in the
window.
Yeah,
they could see you.
Yeah, exactly.
It was like,
oh,
hey,
man, go inside, you know. So they were like, oh, maybe we should try some music on Sunday. And they saw a big increase in their sales. And next thing you know, can you believe it? Jazz actually paid off.
Hey, I can believe it. You and I could talk about this for hours, and we have. But you and I could talk about this for hours. When it's presented correctly in the right setting, it's a moneymaker.
It can work.
It's a moneymaker.
So then they added 2 more nights, and it was just a duo. And this was really just, you know, I mean, it was band in a corner playing standards.
Yeah, I mean, but you're playing stuff. You guys are together. You're not just like schlepping through stuff. You guys are playing.
No, we got real
serious
about it.
Yeah.
And then it was, but when it started though, it was, they wanted it just presented in that sort of fashion,
sure,
just nice background music. And then, you know, drums ended up getting added on, and this is when it was actually Dan Eflin's gig at the time.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, we got more serious about the gig, and I started bringing in a lot of original music and doing arrangements. And then, you know, Dan doesn't live here anymore, and actually, you know, he's kind of pursued something else. And it had different guitar players on there, and eventually Dave Miller moved back from New York.
Mm.
And he and I had known each other casually and played together before he moved there. And by this point, Michael was already on the gig. And, you know, I brought Dave on, showed him some of the music that we were doing, and it was just sort of like, it just clicked, and it was a great fit. And Dave brought a lot of music on board as well, and it just, the three personalities together just blended in this really unique voice. And I got real serious about the group at that point. And
do you think just sticking on the Pops thing, because it's interesting to me, I mean, where that's located, right?
Mm-hmm.
What is it, State in Ohio?
Yeah.
Kind of right on that huge corner.
Yeah,
you guys
exactly
are upstairs.
Yeah.
So people can walk in, have a glass of wine, have something to eat.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's snacky food, I think, right? They're not doing full meals or anything, are they?
Yeah, they were, and then the kitchen kind of pared down. But now they're kind of beefing it back up again.
Okay. And you guys are playing there. But, I mean, to me, when it's presented the right way, and you guys are playing, you know, your originals and things like that, people are probably listening. Right? I mean, it's more than just background. I mean, it's meant to be background, but it's more than just background because you probably have people if they're interested in what's happening, they can definitely hear what's happening. And that inspires you, I would imagine, as well.
Well, absolutely. I think the most interesting thing is I like to call POPs the laboratory. Mm-hmm. So it's the place that we get to work things out, and we also get that instant feedback. Mm-hmm. So good fries, huh?
Good stuff, man.
This is kind of an invaluable experience. I think when a lot of people have creative music projects, it's like you write the material, you work on it, you have a couple rehearsals, you book a couple gigs, and then, you got to see where it goes from there.
Right.
But to be able to take something and, bounce it around to the individual members and then get constant feedback from people, you really start to go, oh, we have something there. Oh, that's got something. And if you figure out also what's not working. So there's a really interesting editing process that we get to have with it's kind of a luxury. So then when we go and play more feature concerts or if we're out on the road or something, we really are able to put together these really strong sets and things that just is like all this material that clicks,
Well, you bring up a great point because, when people write original music or are just kind of working and they're playing a gig here, a gig there, a gig here, especially with original music, it's one thing to rehearse. It's another thing to play live.
Yeah, absolutely.
And to be able to do what you're doing in rehearsal live. And the only way to do that is by playing a ton. And these days, back 30 years ago, they were playing six nights a week. It was
no problem.
It was happening. But so you guys have a real rare opportunity. The other thing I think is interesting to me, and I've always liked this, is that the situation where you're in, you're able to work through stuff, but you're not like on stage, everybody's dead quiet staring at you.
Right, right.
So you can make the mistakes, work through stuff, so that when you're in a position when you're on stage and everyone's staring at you, like you're going to be at Winters on February 8th, everyone is going to stare at you.
No.
But you're working through all this stuff kind of like on a you're playing live, people are listening, but it's not all on you. So you have that opportunity to work through stuff.
Absolutely. And we have they're almost like paid rehearsals.
Sure,
and it's like we don't take advantage of
the not starting
in a negative
and stopping
way.
And rewriting charts and
but I mean you're right, there's this kind of thing where it's just like we can play and have something not go well that time, and it's not the end of the world, And when we go to do a concert at like Winters and things, there's no guesswork anymore,
right?
And the other interesting thing is like we've gotten to know each other so well. Like Michael and I have been playing together. I mean, outside of this trio too. I mean, we've played together for years and years and years in so many different bands, The communication between the three of us, even on we're at this point now, even when we have new material, we can cue each other in these, in these musical ways or even just a look or things. We just get to understand how the band functions.
Yeah.
But it's great. It's great. The POPs thing has been amazing, and it's afforded us incredible opportunities.
Oh, yeah. So now this new release, Nothing Here Belongs. Mm-hmm. What number release is this?
This is the second? Fourth.
Oh, it's the fourth one for the band.
Yeah.
Wow. But you've only been traveling and touring on two of them, right? Is that?
Yeah,
why
I would
I'm
say. Yeah, I mean, really, the three. There was that we actually did. Or speaking of POPs, back in 2016, we put out an album called POPs, and it was an homage to that venue, which was really important for the band, but it also assembled all these jazz arrangements of pop tunes from the '60s through the '90s. And that was probably the first album we ever did stuff on the road. And it was pretty small, maybe a couple weeks that year we went out. And then the following year, at the end of 2017, we put out a thing called Screen Sounds, which was all movie and TV music.
Yep.
And on that one, we did a lot. I mean, it was probably, we probably played 40 or 50 shows in 2017
outside
on the road.
Of, outside of POPs.
And then all through 2018, we were on the road.
How do you guys manage that if you're playing at POPs three nights a week and then you're on the road? You're obviously subbing some of the POPs things out. They're cool with that,
Some of it, but we were able to also, if we want to go out for any extended runs, I try not to do too many where we're going to be gone for like 2 weeks at a time.
Right.
We usually do that only like once or twice a year. A lot of them you can do Wednesday to Sunday.
That's true. And what days are you at POPs?
Sunday, Monday, Tuesday.
Oh, okay.
So we can do a Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, Saturday run, come back into town.
Yeah.
Wednesday, Thursday. And that also has allowed us to do these little kind of these little spider web things. You know, it's like, okay, we're going to go up north. We're going to go out west. We're going to go out south. We're going to go out east. And then when you want to do a longer run, you've started to build a little network. For the
right,
band,
so. Right. Well, so you're at Pops. You've got this thing coming up. But let's talk a little bit about how you ended up in Chicago. Because it was...
I moved here.
Well, that solves the entire mystery. Oh, my God. I can't believe
it. It's unbelievable.
But you're from Cincinnati, right?
I am from Cincinnati,
and
Ohio.
You came up. Andy Brown's from Cincinnati.
Andy Brown is actually from upstate New York, but he was in Cincinnati.
He went to school there?
He went to the School for Creative Performing Arts, High School, which is where he met his wife. Like, they are like childhood sweethearts.
I know. Yeah, I know. She was told. I've never had Andy on the show. Hi, Andy. But Petro's been on twice.
Okay.
So, you know, there you have it. But anyway, so you came up
from
Cincinnati.
No, I met Andy there. Yeah, he moved there when he was in high school, and we met, became fast friends. And I've been playing in Andy's group for years and years, and he and I have played with so many people together
as well. Is that why you moved to Chicago? Were you all coming up at the same time, or did you make it here first?
I was here first. Andy moved to New York.
Oh, okay.
So I came here. I had kind of a circuitous route getting to Chicago. I mean, I had been coming to Chicago for years and years. I used to drive up anybody I wanted to see at the showcase. I used to just jump in my car, drive up and see them, whether it was Mose Allison or Brad Meldow, or I came up and saw Eddie Gomez one time with James Williams when he was doing the Super Trios. Just anybody, I would just come up. And I thought about moving to New York, but I was just, you know, I like the Midwest. I do. I mean, I love New York too, but... So Chicago was a great fit, but I actually moved to Germany for a while.
Wow.
I lived in Berlin. A girl that I had known in college, she moved there after school, and she and I had dated, and I had a real strong connection with her, and I'd never been to Europe, and I decided to take a trip to Germany, and next thing you know, And I stayed with her for a month, and I just had a great time in Berlin, and I decided, what the hell, moved to Germany. So that was,
you were in Berlin.
Yeah, I was in Berlin, and then I had to come, we had to come back to the States for different reasons, and we ended up moving here. And we got set up here, and we were here for several years, and then she had the opportunity to go back to Germany, so I went back to...
I remember this.
Yeah, this was like 2006 or something. We went to Germany. We were going to be there for 2 years. We were in Bonn for a little, like...
Because she's teaching or something. This is your wife.
Yeah, this is now my wife. Now my wife. This girl.
I think your wife would be really angry if you're roaming around the countryside with your
chick.
Wife.
You know, it's like, yes, this woman that is now my wife. The brilliant Marie. So she's a German translator. Now she actually heads a language division. But she was actually just studying German literature and translation and language arts and things.
So you moved back over there in 2006. Because she got a job teaching.
She got an opportunity at the University of Bonn to get a master's degree studying like language and translation. We were there and I was playing in Germany and doing a little bit.
What's that like? What's the jazz scene in Germany?
You know,
I'm fascinated because I mean you were there earlier. Mm-hmm. And you're in Berlin.
Berlin was way different, you know, than Bonn.
Really?
You know, different, very different speed.
I mean, what year were you first in Berlin?
This was like 2001, 2002.
All right, so what is that, about 10, 12 years, 15 years since the wall came down, something
like
that, right?
I mean, it wasn't long.
So what was that jazz scene like that then?
Well, Berlin was always so cosmopolitan and just had so many different scenes. So they had a real heavy, like, there was a big, you know, free jazz component there. There was definitely that kind of ECM jazz.
Yeah.
And then you get this extreme other things where they, like, the traditional jazz, like, very traditional jazz. And you would get these people who would do, like, recreation bands.
Like trad jazz?
Yeah, so it'd be like the Muggsy Spanier Band, specific, you know.
Wow, okay.
So it's funny, I played a lot of, in addition to like hooking up with these like creative music circles, I got like really well versed in trad jazz when I was in Germany. Who would have thought?
All right, that's unbelievable. That's your next group.
Yeah, right,
exactly. German trad jazz band.
Perfect, yeah.
Do you know how to speak German then?
I mean, I speak horrible German.
Yeah. But if you were in Germany, you could get
around. Yes, I can get by, but I sound like a barbarian.
It's better if you're with your wife.
Yes, I let her do all the speaking, yeah.
So you guys went back in 2006, but did you stay? You didn't stay for 2 years then, did you?
No, it got cut short because she got this opportunity here. She thought she was going to go to the University of Chicago, and then she had this job came up, and so that brought us back, and
And
the rest is, you know.
So now you're here.
Yeah.
Yeah. So you're working, you're doing all this stuff. What makes you think that starting a jazz trio and touring the country is going to make you world famous? Because there's a lot of people, I don't think that.
That's not serious.
What are some of the challenges? Because a jazz trio, first off, first question, how do you get bookings for a jazz trio outside of Chicago? Because that's one of those challenges. I don't think a lot of people watching this show will probably, you know, understand. They go to the showcase and they see a band. They go to Green Mill, they see a band. They don't realize that they're making sense of this whole thing because they're going from Minnesota to Milwaukee to Chicago to Detroit because they can economically make it make sense so that they can pay for what's happening.
And stuff.
With a jazz trio, for somebody that's just starting out, that's got to be pretty difficult.
Yeah, I mean, this is a tough thing to get, you know, to talk about. I mean, it's like, you know, the business aspect
music. I think it's interesting, right?
No, it is extremely interesting. The reason I care very deeply about the band and the music, which is the only reason that I'm sort of focusing on it in this way and pushing it, you know, if you will. The reality exists also that you're only going to have a particular lifespan of a group if new opportunities don't keep coming up. And, you know, it's great. I mean, I love Chicago and it's an amazing place, but even still, if you're playing all the cool gigs with your group, it's just like hard to keep people invested and involved if there aren't more opportunities.
You're doing the same thing. You can go on the Chicago Milwaukee rotation.
Yeah.
And that's it.
I think that's a lot of times why you don't have bands per se, like in things. It's just like, you know, somebody gets a group and they do a certain thing and then members change out and it's, you know, but if you have music where it's like the three people that are doing it are integral to it and you can't present it without that, a band has to create opportunities and stuff. Yeah. So it started, like I said, kind of small, where it was like, well, okay, nobody's going to want to give me these opportunities because they're going to be like, you have to put butts in seats. So you got to start with little ones that you know you can do, or just show people that you're willing to kind of work really hard to make them perform. And then from that, you would get another one. So it started with regions that I felt like I knew, some, you know, like Ohio, for example, and stuff. And
you knew you could probably get some people to come out
Exactly. And just kept going from there. And then every once in a while, you get sort of like lucky breaks. Like out of the blue, sometimes people just give you opportunities, which is nice. There are venues out there that have a lot of people in them that you don't have to bring every single person out there, you know. And then most of the venues are going to have to work in tandem with it. Some draw, they have some of their own. And then there's some places where it's like you got to put every butt in the seat. But we had a really amazing opportunity at like the Rex. They just liked our music, liked the band. So we went to Toronto. We played there. We were there. The talent buyer there says, I'm going to put you guys on the Toronto Jazz Festival. So it was like we got to play alongside Go-Go Penguin. They're big here, but they're humongous, like in Europe,
huge, right?
In Canada and stuff, you know. It was incredible. We played Saturday nights of the Toronto Jazz Festival in the co-produced series that was done at the Rex. So it's like things like that where you do get breaks, and then that allows a lot of other opportunities, because if they see that, you know, you could do the Barn Sessions that was up in Madison, it's outside of Madison, and that's almost like an indie rock series, and it was like have a sold out show there, and then, you know, the Toronto Jazz Festival and then the Chicago Jazz Festival and these different things, you know, it starts building a sort of portfolio for the band, and that's it.
Now you have like a network, and then you combine that with social media, right? So you can actually stay in contact with audiences in those regions. Mm-hmm. I mean, how much of that now do you focus on as well?
Well, I mean, it's just a reality of the way, you know, people get their information. I mean, there's, you know, you have this, you know.
I have this. I have ChicagoJazz.com.
You had the magazine. You have the, you know, some people are still print. Some people are radio. Some people, you know. It's just everybody gets their information in different ways, so you really have to try to make sure that you're getting information out to all these different, you know, to different, just in different outlets.
Mm-hmm.
And Yeah, just sort of like every single side of it. You know, the social media, the print, the radio, just staying, you know, staying current and staying relevant. Keep putting things out there that people are interested
in. Well, and also I think a lot of people should understand that you're, you know, it's on, your name is on it. Obviously, the other guys in the band are really big,
you know,
parts of it too. But you're the one managing all the day-to-day stuff that nobody knows about because you just show up on stage and everybody's like, wow, Joe's here with his bass.
Yeah.
But you've been doing paperwork. You've been making phone calls, emails. You've been sending out. So you've been writing press releases. You've been deciding. I mean, that whole thing, now that you know how to play, so let's say you don't have to practice 10 hours a day anymore. You probably still practice, but not 10 hours a day. To me, you probably spent 8-9 hours a day on all the business stuff just to keep things moving forward.
Yeah, there is. It's just taken over. I mean, like, wow, what a terrible idea. You know, it's like, I mean, it was just funny because it's like, I had no reason to lead a band.
Right.
You know, it's like, I had a very, very happy career as a side
band. I had
no
reason to start a magazine.
Exactly, right?
None.
You know, it's just like, I could have just gone, hello? Okay. and shown up. But, you know, like I said, I can't, once I sort of saw, it's like, you know, I think this group is unique. I really like this music. You know, I don't see other things out there like this. And so I wanted it, you know, I wanted it to have a life. And you're right. Then all of a sudden you're a booking agent. Then you're
right.
A tour promoter.
Yep.
Then you're a band manager. You know, it's like there's all of these different things where it's just like they all take so much time.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, you could keep sinking hours and hours into it. But, you know, I think one thing that's interesting about, you know, I've got two kids, and the thing that has taught me more than anything else is, like, you have to set limits on things, and you also have to plan. You know, you can't just do one thing forever. You have to just, okay, this is going to be my time for
right.
working on this. This is going to be contracts. Yep. This is going to be this. Here's my practice time. Here's my family. You know,
right.
Not that every minute of your life needs to be planned out and stuff,
right.
But I mean, you have to have start and stop points.
Right. Well, it's, you're running a business.
Yeah.
And that's, I mean, even, you know, I've been running a business since 1999 and I'm still alive somewhat, but I keep learning about the scheduling thing. And I remember being in school, I remember hearing this, and now I think it pertains to this too, is that, you know, they always said playing jazz or playing music is like 75% concept and understanding of the music, and 25% is ability. You
mm-hmm.
know? So it's like you've got to understand what you're doing. Now I think with this, right, I mean, you're probably 25% is like actual playing, and 75% is actually running the business so that you can play.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, one of the things that I find challenging is after a day of, you know, especially when we're like on the road and stuff, you know, because it's like also I'm the van driver as well. So it's like I'm the chauffeur. It's like this. And then all of a sudden you have to be like, great, we've got this amazing opportunity. We're going to get to play this feature show at Blue Jazz. It's got a bunch of people here. Now I got to get myself back into
right.
the, you know, back to in the right headspace. But that's, you know, that I will also say is one of the things I really appreciate about this group, because I don't have to worry that it's not going to go well. It's like we play together so much and we
yeah.
know each other so well. I mean, obviously, you know, you have some nights that are better than others and stuff, but just like I can trust those guys so well, and I think, you know, they would say the same about me and just our relationship together. So,
well, that's,
know,
that's
it gets me into space pretty fast.
Yeah, I mean that and that's part of being an artist too, is that everybody trusts everybody.
Right.
What's happening.
It's not going to work if you don't trust
it's
each other.
It's not going to work.
No one's going to ever take any cool risks or anything.
No,
know?
Exactly. So, February 8th.
February 8th.
Nothing Here Belongs. Let's talk about the album now. What are these all original tunes? Are they based off of something? What are people going to hear?
It's predominantly, yeah, this album is predominantly original music. The other ones, you know, people kept, we're kind of falling into these thematic things like, and it was important for me on this one to, you know, if you come out to a live show, you'll hear this, you know, this wide variety of material. You're going to hear these kind of select jazz tunes that we pick from a little bit more obscure stuff, you know, Chico Hamilton things or kind of some obscure Monk,
yeah.
things like that. And then we have all these originals, and then you're going to hear these, you know, some of our goofy movie and TV stuff and things, or the West Side Story music and
that's
things.
Right, yeah, you did
yeah.
the West Side Story. That's
yeah,
right.
That was actually
that's
with
right.
the old group too.
Yeah.
But with this one, you know, it's like I really wanted it to, so it's, I think it's six originals, and then there's three, you know, covers, if you mm-hmm. will. I wanted it to feel like what you would get from a live set, but make the focus on the original music. So at the show at Winners, obviously we're going to be focusing a lot on the originals, mm-hmm. But we'll make that concert, I think in particular, is going to be just really kind of represent the breadth of material that we do.
Yeah. Let's talk a little bit about who's in the band, because I know you mentioned their names here and there, but yes. Why don't you talk a little bit about how they got in the band, because they didn't just start 10, 15 years ago, right? I mean, that you had different people in the band, yeah. And now you're solidified with these guys, and
yeah,
this
so
is the
it's,
band.
It's guitarist Dave Miller mm-hmm. And drummer Michael Avery. They, you know, like I mentioned Dave before, Dave
moved back from New York.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. He had moved to New York. I can't remember what year he left Chicago, but he came back like, this must've been, I don't know, it was 4 years ago, five years ago, maybe somewhere in there. And, at that point it was just the group was in transition. I had sort of just taken over Pops as the leader, you know, and I'd been building this stuff up with the old members and I was just trying out different guitar players and things. And so Michael Avery had already joined the band at that point. He took over the drum chair only a few years after we started. So Mike's been there for a really long time. Mm-hmm. And he, you know, recently moved to New Orleans.
Oh, he did?
Yes. He's not even here in Chicago anymore. He's like snuck away, you know? So that's been,
I didn't even know that.
Yeah. So that's been an interesting change too. So Michael, mainly does, he's still in Chicago a lot. But he'll fly up, we'll meet him here and we'll go out and do the stuff on the road. So he's not doing
the Pops gig anymore.
No, he actually does it a fair amount still though.
Oh, he
was just here, you know, he was just here. And so he just played this past week, but yeah, we've been having a lot of our good friends, everybody from, there's a guy up in Milwaukee named Devin Drobka, who's been picking up some of that slack. Great drummer. He does a fantastic job. Greg Archery, another guy, just does a great job with the group. And we've had all, you know, everybody from George Flutist to Chris Baker, different people come down and play. Yeah. It's been a lot of
fun. That's interesting. So he's coming in and out of town, but he's still mainly in town. Somewhere.
Yeah, I mean, he's still...
The reason why I think it's interesting is because I hear about this, like, guys moved to New York, but then every time I turn around, they're over there.
Right, exactly.
Like, wait a minute. But everything's so close now and connected and everything, so it doesn't make a difference. So let's get everybody refocused here. February 8th. Winners Jazz Club, Nothing Here Belongs, the CD release concert. I guess we can't even say CD release. Their new recording release concert, however you want to say it, because there's more than just CDs, obviously.
Right.
It's going to be a Winners. WinnersJazzClub.com. Get tickets. 7:30 p.m., 9:30 p.m., mm-hmm. I assume. WinnersJazzClub.com. And, of course, if they want to find out more about where else the trio is performing or where you're performing, is it JoePalacastro.com?
Yeah, there's actually a dedicated website for the band, which is thejptrio.com.
www.thejptrio.com.
And then, yeah, I do have a personal site, but my personal site's more for just general information about who I am.
Okay.
Which, if you're that interested, you can go to that.
All right, so jptrio.com.
Yeah, thejptrio.com.
Thejptrio.com. And, what's after Winters? Are you heading back out on the road, or what's happening?
We have a few dates back to back there. We're going to be up in Madison playing at Cafe Coda. They just reopened again. We've got some stuff in Columbus, Ohio at a place called Notes. We've got we're back at the Carytown Concert House. We've got for the spring we're doing a bunch of like those shorter runs. It's like 2 to 5 day things.
Also, you're probably going to get some festival stuff. Drop it in
hopefully
summer.
So, yeah.
Fingers crossed. I think this is around the time when things start to shake with that too. So thejptrio.com, Winners Jazz Club, February 8th. We will see you there hopefully. And Joe, thanks for being on the show, man. I'm glad you came
thanks
down.
For,
this
I,
has been
I,
great.
I have to try the mother. Mother-in-law, isn't that how I have to do this? Does everyone know what the mother-in-law is?
I don't have time to explain what the mother-in-law is. Look at the menu here at Johnny O's. Come on down to Johnny O's and experience it. It's a tamale.
It's like a veal cutlet wrapped up in a tamale, put chili on sauce. You know, it's ridiculous.
I wouldn't eat it at noon because you're going to go to sleep.
Yeah.
So, unless that's what you want to do. I don't
Maybe
know.
So.
All right. So, Joe, thanks for being on the show. I appreciate you coming down as usual. And, of course, the way I always end this, hopefully Joe will see you and I will see you because I'm going to try to be February 8th at Winters Jazz Club. But if we don't see you there, hopefully we will see you somewhere out on the scene.